This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back, and I really do mean welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast here on Place to Be Nation's podcast network, if you will. I'm so glad to be back. I had to kind of get out of my bunker with the college basketball and the NCAA tournament. Now that we're in April, you can smell the spring coming into the air, unless you're in Louisiana, then it just smells like rain and mud. But we'll talk about up in that Upper East region, what's going on with Adam Murray?
I'm amazed to hear your voice. You know, all of a sudden we're talking college basketball, and then you just disappeared.
I'm amazed to hear your actual voice, because right around this time I don't get to hear any of it because it's nothing but gravel and horse.
It's the ever-changing, you know, I like to keep you intrigued, keep the plot line going. How will you sound this week?
Has the spring made your voice eternal? Is that what it is?
No, it's called modern medication.
Yeah, you were in a daze for like a good week there too. Yeah.
I think it's a trend, but I tried, and all of a sudden my voice gets better, you disappear.
Yeah, and it was just bad. Like you were saying, it was just a bad break where you got sick one week, and then the week after that I was watching tournament games, didn't have time to do a whole lot other than work and other things. Because, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, we love doing this show, we love to inform the fans, but we all have lives, you know, we all have things that get in the way, and it was hard to get back to where we were, and it was a little bit frustrating for the both of us, because, you know, things are getting a little bit intense in the NBA season, as it always does in April, because it means the regular season, which a lot of people look at as kind of like a giant eye-rolling chore, is finally over, or it's about to end. There's only about maybe 6 games left for a lot of these NBA teams as we talk. So as we get to the, like, let me just put it this way, and I'll just kind of set you up like this, Adam. When you get to April and you're an NBA player, or you're a representative of an NBA organization or franchise, what is the mindset? Now, I know it changes depending on what team you represent and where you're at in the playoff seedings, but what kind of urgency sets in once you get into the month of April?
Well, there's extreme urgency, unless you're on the tank train.
Which gets jumped on very quickly.
Yeah, now we're technically mathematically in, but yeah, you know, if we lose a couple more games, and I don't know, we should rest our star player. He's had a good year. Let's go play this undrafted guy nobody's ever heard of. We'll get a couple 10-day guys up, and we'll all be good.
You look at box scores, and, I mean, look at the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, I think we already talked about that. I mean, their injury woes have been going on since before we took our break, but it got even worse, you know, with Mike Conley with the Achilles, Tony Allen's hobbled, obviously Marc Gasol's done, and I'm seeing guys like Xavier Munford and Bryce Cotton, and I'm not trying to disrespect those players, but those are D-League guys. Some of those aren't even D-League guys, you know?
Yeah, some of the guys, it's just like ESPN doesn't even have a page for them, like when they... You know, no picture, no page. I'm like,
I've literally never heard of Xavier Munford. I've heard of Mumford and Sons, but I've never heard of Xavier Munford.
Yeah, it's just there's so. But now, you know, playoff teams. All right, you've made your deadline trades. You've got your Chinese imports who have, you know, their season ended. Now's the time you need to, like, okay, we need to hunker down. We need to find our seeding. We need to come together as a team. And now is the time the season starts. I know, you know, they're all tired. They've already played 60-some-odd games. But nope, season starts today. Who cares how you feel? Who cares what injuries you're battling? Now you need to be fresh.
And the thing is, too, even though I think Cleveland has gotten a little bit more breathing room because Toronto suffered a bit of an injury bug with Damari Carroll, who some people are talking might not make it might not come back at all for this postseason. That's still up in the air. And then Kyle Lowry had an elbow injury that set him out for a little while. So now there's a little bit more breathing room for Cleveland. So Cleveland, despite all the troubles and all the theatrics about, you know, LeBron and Tyronn Lue and this and that and this and another, they have enough breathing room to kind of feel a little bit comfortable, I would say, you know, with a three-game separation right now as the one seed. Outside of that, including Golden State, because of the fact that the San Antonio Spurs are only about four games behind, there's a little bit of anxiety there almost across all the way once you get to eight, you know?
Well, first with Cleveland and Toronto, they sort of realized, like, okay, we're content with being 1-2. Let's just, you know, we have a big enough lead on, you know, Toronto.
And the difference between 2 and 3 for Toronto and whoever that might be, we'll talk about that in a second. But
you know,
the difference is like 6 games, yeah.
Yeah, so it's 6 games with what, 6 or 7 games to go? So it's like,
it's
okay.
Over, yeah.
We can sort of rest our guys a bit. Lowry's a little dinged. Oh, he could probably play, but you know what? Let's just keep him out. Let's get Norman Powell some reps. Let's get Delon Wright in. You know, there's no urgency really for them. Cleveland, they have, you know, they have not gotten better at all since Tyronn Lue took over, and they're just sort of lucky they have this huge lead to sort of rest coast in on.
Yeah, they did beat a hot Hawks team on Friday in overtime in a pretty good game. That was the one right before the now infamous Golden State-Boston game, which you and I will talk about in a second. I'm sure you got a little bit of ammunition on that one. But let's just keep going with Cleveland. It does seem like they're about the same. You know, when Tyronn Lue got there, like there was this kind of like, there was this prevailing theory of, well, they're playing too slow and LeBron wants to play faster, so Tyronn Lue is going to speed in the pace and try to get their finesse up. Well, it really hasn't. It's really the same team. Defensively, they're still very, very good. I think that's really where they hang their hat.
Well, defensively, they're good, but they just have log jams in the front court. And then once you play Golden State in the end, you're going to have to go small. LeBron is ultimately going to have to play the four, which you're woefully really depleted in the backcourt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, well, we got our guy in. Everything's going to be good. We don't care if he wants to change his style. He's our guy. We all like him. And then now they seem to be like, we don't really care anymore.
And you and I have watched these games and watched these teams long enough to know that trade, like, unhappiness rumors in April don't fucking mean a thing. Like, it's really about once you get to the playoffs, and if you start seeing, like for example, Toronto last year, if you start seeing bad vibes on the team, then you can start questioning whether or not you need to reshuffle things. But rumors like, oh, Kyrie Irving's not happy with his role anymore, I always kind of have a sniff of bullshit on that one.
Well, you could say that, yeah, but there's always, you know, one of those rumors just won't die, and you know, Kevin Love doesn't really fit. Well, he really kind of doesn't really fit in that system. And Kyrie's not really being used to he's not being utilized the way he probably could be. Yeah, you can kind of see that. It's kind of just LeBron's team, and he'll, whatever he tells you to do, you're going to do. But as long as everybody's winning, as long as everybody's happy, you're going to play, you know, the 8 seed, whoever it might be, isn't really going to pose much of a challenge. Even, you know, the second round, whoever falls between 3 and 8, nobody really scares anybody, even the hot Hawks are just hot. But as we've seen before, they're not as talented as they were last year. So
does Paul Millsap have a case for Defensive Player of the Year? His defensive win shares are actually higher than Kawhi Leonard's and Draymond Green's.
No, I don't think so.
Was he always a great defensive player and we're just coming around to it? Or because I remember in particular in the playoffs last year, Paul Millsap was forced to guard LeBron James because of Kyle Korver's injury and also Damari Carroll's injury, and he got his lunch eaten by LeBron James. Like, LeBron was actually laughing at him while he was trying to take the ball away from him. Is Paul Millsap a great defensive player who just had, you know, a rotten series?
Well, I wouldn't say he's a great defensive player. He's just the way that team is sort of set up, nobody else is really playing defense, so you know, with Draymond and Kawhi, they're the defensive stars of a defensive unit. Nobody's ever said Atlanta has a superior defensive team.
Well, they picked it up in the last 2 months. You know, if you look at their numbers right now, they've been very, very good. They've been probably better in the East than Cleveland even has.
And they've been better because, you know, like we said a few minutes ago, now's the time to buckle down and, you know, start being serious.
True.
And
true, yeah.
You know, oh, we're fading. We're, you know, okay, we decided not to trade our guys. Okay, guys, this is our team. We're going to do it. We didn't get rid of you, Al. We didn't get rid of you, you know, Jeff. So that's all.
Well, in that way, did the winning help last year? Because now they know, okay, this is how we got to snap to it again. And they were able to do it because they had a taste of it in the past.
I don't know, because at the same time, it's success is always the hardest thing. So if you did, you know, good before, it's very hard to recapture that, especially if one of your key pieces in Damari Carroll is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you replaced him with nothing, so it's, you know, you could say you had a taste of it, but they sort of coasted on that last year and sort of fed into themselves as, you know, the player of the month is four people, and, you know, the whole Atlanta Hawks are back, and then they get wiped out, and now you have to work, they have to work for it this time and sort of earn it back.
Yeah, and you see, and you make a good point, I want to elaborate on it. I think that's the most underrated part about once the playoffs start and you see these really, really good top three seeds or top four seeds just start kind of beating down on the road teams that they play against in the best of seven. Usually that ends in a sweep. And then there's this notion of, well, that team didn't belong in the playoffs anyway. They were sort of riding the coattails of a bad conference. But I think, to be honest, Adam, maybe you could play the devil's advocate here, because I know you're not a huge fan of some of these teams that make that last spot in these conferences in specific years. Making the playoffs is so hard. It is so hard. It doesn't mean that you have to be very good all season long. Sometimes it doesn't mean you have to have even a winning record, but it is so difficult to get through the drudges of the NBA regular season and find a way to play more games. There are so many franchises that would, like even the Pelicans this year, that would just die to get back into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, but it's two different types of teams. You have, let's say, the, you know, the young Celtics and the young Jazz. They're hungry, they're fighting. They've, you know, these kids have never been in the playoffs, so the experience they get, this is the next level we've been telling you about, this is the next level you've never seen, that experience they've learned, you can't replicate. But at the same time, if you're a veteran team, like let's say the Wizards, who just, you know, have very wishy-washy.
Are they in the dead zone? Are they in the NBA version of the dead zone, where they're still in it, but there's probably very little chance of them making it?
They're, as of now, three games out with six games to go. And
still behind the Bulls, yeah.
Yeah, so they're in 10th place, and it'll be very hard considering they haven't really done much to this point. Mm-hmm. And that was the story the whole season, is they just never turned it on, and that's been the story as well. The coaching has just sort of been mediocre, and they sort of just phone it in, and I don't want to say questionable drafting.
So you're saying the mindset for a veteran team at this point in the playoffs is much different than maybe a younger team trying to get their bearings, even losing teams like Denver and Minnesota, you know, because even though they're losing games with the starting lineup out on the floor, which is valuable sometimes. But the Jazz and the Celtics, you're saying, is kind of on a different plane than, like, say, the Wizards or the Bulls, where it's like, okay, time's ticking here.
Yeah, and like, let's just look at the Knicks, you know. All the stories you hear is just how demoralized and depressed and how sad Carmelo is because his team is horrible, which, you know, everyone could see coming. But that's the, you know, the veteran guy is like, well, you know my window is short. And then you have, you know, look at, like, Sacramento with DeMarcus, who's he's never made the playoffs. This is, like, the first time, I think, in, like, 10 years they actually got 30 wins or something. It's just, if you don't see the playoffs, you just don't know what it's like. And then that's the, you know, the experience these young guys get. What good is another, you know, okay, we're a young team, we sort of crapped out. Well, they could just go draft your replacement, and you'll be traded in 2 days and might be out of the league if you get buried in some deep roster. So you could say it might be better to miss the playoffs, might be better, but that's just from a franchise standpoint. From, you know, these guys playing, that's all they have is, you know, right now you go home and then you could just watch on TV like everyone else, wondering, oh, I wonder what it's like.
So what you're saying is that even though the Celtics, even though they had that memorable game four with the Kevin Love injury and Jay Crowder basically getting sucker punched by J.R. Smith, that four-game sweep against the Cavaliers was valuable for them.
Well, yeah, because then they learned how a playoff, they've seen the difference between playoff Cavaliers and then regular season Cavaliers. And if you watch the series, which, you know, everybody's already forgotten because it was a sweep, the Celtics played them hard. It was just, well, the Cleveland is way better and wound up winning by 15, but there was 15 steady. It wasn't like, oh, they let off the gas. The Celtics played them hard. It's just, well, we don't know what to do. And now you've seen this year, you have a young coach, never seen the playoffs, young players, never seen the playoffs. Now they know what it's like, and now they know what they need to do. So you've seen players like Kelly Olynyk, who has just got off of last year. He's become a valuable, you know, three-point shooter. Your Rebko used to be a garbage player.
Jay Crowder's almost been indispensable.
It's funny, we did, you know, our first half of the small forwards, which
we'll eventually finish, yeah.
We'll finish before the draft, I hope, but,
yeah.
You know, Jay Crowder, we had way in the bottom, but once he went out, we're like, holy crap, he's probably the most indispensable guy on the team, you know, next to Isaiah. And it's just like, wow, you know, Jay Crowder really has developed from year to year, and you watched it, you know, that you learned from the playoffs, as you see how everybody starts taking it seriously. Every possession sort of counts in the playoffs, which is why you don't have, you know, somebody going off for 50. Scores get a lot lower, shots go down, and percentages, and you're not taking the stupid fadeaway threes like you're doing in the regular season.
We've seen that with Damian Lillard in Portland, where, I mean, he's going off, but he's taking a whole lot of shots to do so, you know?
Yeah.
With the Boston Celtics, obviously, a very eventful week. Not just because they're in the middle of a very contentious little mud pile there in the middle of the Eastern Conference playoff standings with the Charlotte Hornets, the Atlanta Hawks, who we just talked about, and the Miami Heat, who, even though they still have not gotten an official word about what's going to happen with Chris Bosh and his blood clots and his calf muscle, still likely that they're going to be a pretty dangerous playoff team at over 10 games over 500. But that's where everybody here is. You know, all of them except for Boston, weirdly, have clinched the playoffs. But Boston got – would you call this the biggest regular season win they've had since the Big Three broke up?
For them, there's, you know
– we're talking about their win on the road against the Warriors. The Warriors – first home loss in the regular season since December 2014.
Yeah, but which is an impressive streak.
Or maybe January 15, I can't remember. One of the two.
And, well, you remember they almost lost at home to Milwaukee back in December.
They almost lost to the Brooklyn Nets if Brooke Lopez doesn't screw up a putback.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, that's those three teams aren't the biggest powerhouse team, especially with Jay Crowder resting. It was a huge win, but you're watching that game, you know, I you know, it's, you know, NBA TV replayed as the game of the week. It was on, you know.
It was on ESPN at the late night, too, with Mike Tirico calling the game.
Yeah, so I caught it. Yeah, I caught it Saturday morning. I caught the CSN New England replay, and I caught the ESPN replay at NBA TV as the game of the week.
You got to admit it with Marcus Smart. You good draft pick. You got to admit it.
He just needs to learn. He needs to talk to his college mate Tony Allen, and be like, you know, Tony's go like, look, just don't shoot. You can't shoot.
Yeah, but Marcus Smart's got balls. Like, he'll take the pass that might get stolen and then turns into an easy layup from Isaiah Thomas. You know, he's that guy. You know,
he's that guy that has incredible energy, incredible defense, and he's making plays like you never seen. But just don't take that three. But just going to Golden State quickly. That was a lot of bad basketball they were playing with, you know, Stephon Curry taking like that 35-foot three-pointer from the logo.
Yeah, it seems like that kind of game had to happen at Golden State, a perfect storm where they play their worst and the other team plays at their best.
It wasn't that they played their worst; it was just like everyone's just expecting every three to go in. So there's no reason to take a 30-foot, you know, three-pointer because you can.
Yeah, they're killing 20 turnovers. That was their killer right there.
Oh, they had like seven in the first half, and then
one dribbled off of his foot when he was trying to do a catch and shoot. Then you could realize, okay, he's kind of off today.
Yeah, and then Draymond Green was off too, and you know Harrison Barnes isn't. You know, I'm still.
Did you see that Curry was open to tie that with the second to go, and then Barnes did a turnaround, and I don't even think he left his hands before the expiration. So,
well, with 2 seconds to go, you're not thinking to make the pass. You're just like, oh shit, there's no time.
Okay,
you don't.
So you don't kill Harrison Barnes for that. Okay.
You don't see who's behind you.
Well, he was right in front of him. He rebounded it. He's facing opposite the basket. Curry's in front of him, ready for the handoff.
Yeah, but you're not really looking at that. I don't fault him for that. Literally split second decision. There might be, well, if I pass it to him, that might be that second I don't have. I need to chuck it up really quick.
Okay.
But, you know, but Curry had that open three look at the end, and just, you know, the fans, as much as I want to like the Golden State fans, because they really have that college atmosphere,
a little spoiled.
Yeah, those just, like, the fact that, like, you know, they cut to, like, two guys, like, crying. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. No, I know how much those courtside seats you got cost. There's, You can't be acting that way, Mister.
Well, you know, it's in your mind. It's in your mind, though. Like when you invest that much to buy tickets, regardless of what you're, you know, how much you make and how successful you are, when you pay that much money to buy those tickets, that means that you're pretty invested in the team. When your mindset says you have this deep investment, deep commitment to a team, I guess emotion in that situation is fine, but. You know, I can understand your point of view about it being a little bit like, oh, please, you know?
Yeah, for colleges, you see the college kids doing like, all right, I get that, you know?
Yeah, like when Oklahoma got blown out by Villanova and they're basically sitting on the bench watching their demise. That's depressing. That's depressing.
That was depressing, but, you know, we'll get to college in the tournament a little bit later. But that's the difference is you're watching college ball as opposed to watching, like, they're all just going to go home. They're going to go chill and... You know, have dinners with their wives or girlfriends or extracurricular activities. And, you know, it's the really no difference to them. It's just another game tomorrow. But, you know, yeah, they could have gotten a little spoiled. But for the most part, like I said, Golden State fans just, you know, they bring that atmosphere, which really is lacking in NBA games because, you know, you have the rich corporate types in the bottom level. And it's just like, go team.
And they still have to play the Spurs twice. One it's at home and maybe a few days later. They have a game in between. I don't remember who they play. But right after that, they play the Spurs again, this time in San Antonio. They are at 68-8 after the loss to the Celtics. Give me a percentile chance that they either tie or break the 72-win record in the regular season.
Oh, I am sick of that. That
I know you are, but we gotta ask.
No, not the Golden State Club, but this new, after every break, we have to break down percentages of things, this new
mm-hmm. Oh, ultra. The analytics of it all. Yeah,
yeah, the ultra, the uber hyper. Like
ESPN, like they literally go, oh, it's dropped to 50%. It's like, well, I don't care what a computer says. Like, I would rather ask the fans, what do you think? Do you think they can do it?
Yeah, it's, right now they have a 70% chance to win. You know, it's the first quarter still.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we having this conversation? I don't need to...
Let me ask you this. If they get to 72-10, and there's maybe about two games left to go, do you sit your players?
If you're Golden State or if you're San Antonio?
Golden State. But San Antonio, I think they're going to do it no matter what.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you're like, what's the percentage going to happen? Well, it's going to be a shame because San Antonio's probably going to rest their starters and just let them, you know.
I think the Spurs will be serious in the Golden State game so that they could try to get a taste of a road victory just for their confidence into the playoffs. I don't think they want to get blown out in Golden State twice, okay? They no-showed the first one. They played really well at home. I don't know if at home we're going to see the whole gamut. Maybe I'm totally misreading this and it'll be the other way. It's Pop. You never know what that guy's up to. But.
Yeah, but I think they'll tie it easily to win it. I don't know the schedule, and it just depends, again, if they rest their guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, you mentioned back, like, oh, the first, you know, game one of Sacramento or San Antonio at Golden State. How big is this? I was like, this is a one. This means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, how could it be? This is the biggest regular season match of all time. Like, no, this is the first game of a four game series, but before the four game playoff series. Like, this is the opening match, and San Antonio's like, okay, we'll just see how you guys want to come out, and mm-hmm. You know, it's a chess match at this point.
They have Portland, Minnesota at home. And then they have a third game in a row at home against San Antonio. Then they go to Memphis, who's just been, like we were saying, just been maligned with injuries. They go to San Antonio on that Southwest trip, and then they finish at home against the Grizzlies. I don't see more than two losses here, so I think 72-10 is, I would almost put it at 80%.
Oh yeah, they have especially, you know, with two matches.
73-9.
They'll probably blow one.
Yeah.
They'll blow one game. They should have lost one, and you know, maybe Memphis is like, okay, this is our last stand before our ultimate first round playoff exit.
Have you seen any changes in the Spurs in the last month? They had the big win against Golden State on a Saturday night during the tournament, so not a lot of teams, not a lot of fans were super-duper tuned in, but great defensive job on Curry in that game. But have you seen really any changes with the Spurs?
No, the Spurs seem to just be in playoff mode from day one.
It seems to me like Aldridge is now being more established as the guy in the last couple of months for me.
Well, wasn't he always the guy? I think
he was supposed to be, but I think
he was. Yeah, the first obviously month started kind of slow,
mm-hmm.
but I thought, you know, they always try to make him the guy. It was just the players are like, okay, yeah, okay, we get it, but it takes a while for us to get, you know, used to it, get comfortable with now this new rotation of the, you know, on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just, you know, I think people just sort of, because the same way you said, like, oh, he shouldn't have been an all-star. I'm like, no, I watched it. It's just, I think a lot of people are just not ready to accept it yet.
All right. The Thunder are getting a little hot, you know, because Durant and Westbrook are sort of taking over games again. You know, everybody is fully healthy going into the playoffs. Knock on wood there for Oklahoma City. Hopefully that stays that way. And then you, with a five-game or a five-and-a-half-game separation at the four spot, but definitely right there at the four spot at, you know, almost 20, about 15, 17 or 19 games over 500 is the L.A. Clippers. They're bringing back Blake Griffin on Sunday. He's been gone for quite a while. He served the suspension for the, you know, the controversial fight he had with the equipment manager. It's not like the Clippers have played great without Blake Griffin. They had 1 month, and I think it was January, where they played really well without him. But with Blake Griffin coming back, is that going to screw things up for them chemistry-wise because of how long he's been gone?
No, because watching the Clippers is always the most frustrating part of watching any
They're team. Really good, though. That's the one thing I do notice when I watch them. They're not good enough to beat Golden State. They had a really good one against Oklahoma City and lost, but they are a really, really good team still.
They're really good, but just seems like some days they're just like, you know what, we don't feel like being good today. We just want to, we just sort of want to phone it in.
Yeah, Chris Paul's getting a little older too. I've noticed that. He's definitely a step slower.
Yeah, their window is very small.
It is shrinking. It might be shrunk by the end of the season. Yeah.
They probably got one good year left in them, I think.
Like, should he be the grandpa in the Hoopers? And then Kevin Garnett's pretty damn old, so that was a good casting choice. But yeah, he seems a little old for dad.
Yeah, you know, he has a lot of mileage under him. But the thing with the Clippers is, you know, will the chemistry be fine? Yeah, because you have a very fresh, fresh Blake Griffin who
is still pretty damn good. Yeah,
hungry and is a top. You know, what, 10, top 15 NBA player?
You could make the case that outside of Curry, no one was playing better in the playoffs than Blake Griffin was in the playoffs last year.
So he's going to be hungry because he wants to, you know, you would think he'd want to make up for, you know, all the little off-the-court chatter and you know, the sort of the stir he's caused. So you think he'd want to come back as a beast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a good thing for anybody who has to guard him.
Let's just get through, you know, away from the Western Conference, expand it, you know, through the East and the West, and we'll talk about a team that you think might be susceptible to either bad karma, an injury bug already hitting, which we've already seen with a couple teams, Memphis, Toronto, whatnot, or maybe just a bad draw, which we can't necessarily predict yet because, you know, the West and the bottom part with in the 7 and 8 spots still a little bit hard to figure out. And then you got the East in the middle, like we were talking about. But what team do you think is the most vulnerable to a bad break? You know, it happened to Portland last year. It kind of happened to Toronto last year too, where they just, their mindset got all screwy about not being able to get past the first round and they kind of fell pretty hard to the Wizards. But what team do you think might be in a bad spot here?
Well, right now, sort of the way it's shaken out, all the bad breaks have happened with, you know, let's say Denver and Chicago.
And Miami with the blood clot again.
Down. Yeah. You know, and you know, Milwaukee with their, we have a big signing, with expectations they completely crapped out. But Miami, they had their bad break, but they went and signed Joe Johnson, and he seems to be fitting in quite well. Mm-hmm. Detroit is on an upswing. That trade seems to be better and better by the week.
Mm-hmm.
The only one who's really susceptible to a bad break seems to be the Pacers, who seem to be sort of floundering around in the East.
Well, they're hanging on for dear life, so any bad break for them might just knock them out of the playoffs. I'll tell you one who's firmly in the playoffs, but I think that something is going to happen, whether it be a bad home game in the playoffs if they get home court advantage, or just some kind of just random injury that might really take them out of their momentum. And that's Charlotte. I think Charlotte has played over their heads in the regular season. And, you know, it's like in the tournament, you have a team that plays great in the regular season. Then in the tournament, they kind of flounder because they're not prepared mentally. And I think Charlotte is that team this year.
Charlotte's always one of those teams that, you know, we don't really know what to get from them. They seem to have the chemistry, and then they seem to fall apart because they don't have the talent. And then, you know, a hot streak is now it's just sort of really you can have your hot streak, but it's sort of jockeying for position.
Yeah.
Do you want to be the 3 seed as of now and play Miami? Or, you know, it's really, who do you want to play? I can see Miami just wiping the floor with them, really.
Do you think depth in the NBA with the playoffs at this point, do you think depth is kind of overrated?
Oh, depth is completely meaningless because usually when it comes down to playoffs, your bench shrinks from, like, 9 players to, like, 8 or 7 sometimes.
Yeah, because, you know, I was looking at numbers and, like, all the teams that they say, well, they have the best benches, like, 5 of those top 10 teams aren't even in the running with the playoffs. Like, you know, depth is almost like – it's almost like when you have a food and you have all these ingredients that work. But the thing is, if you take one of those ingredients, even if it's, like, 50 ingredients, if you take one out, the whole thing tastes like crap. You know what I'm saying? Or it just doesn't taste the exact same. You need all of it, you know? So it's good to have a bunch of pieces, but if you miss one guy, if one guy gets an injury, like say Kemba Walker kind of slows down, it gets an ankle problem, or if Cody Zeller just doesn't really play well, all of a sudden Charlotte Hornets are very, very susceptible to a really early playoff disappointment.
Well, if you have to rely on Cody Zeller for anything, that's sort of your demise to begin
with.
Well,
he's improved vastly this year, though. You can give him, though.
Has he really improved?
He's played more minutes, for sure.
Yeah, but does that mean you've vastly improved if it's because you're playing more minutes? But the thing with depth is that just means, you know, who's probably the 2 deepest teams, you know, in the league? I would say it might be Orlando and Minnesota, who just have tons of talent, unmolded talent.
A lot of assets, if you will.
Yeah, tons of draft picks, but they don't know what to do with them, so of course everybody has to get their time.
I mean, Toronto's pretty deep, and they're relying on it. Like, in the regular season, yeah, depth can help you. You know, the Spurs, the Raptors, even Golden State. Remember, in that Boston game, Iguodala didn't play, and I think Andrew Bogut left early in the game. And then Iguodala didn't play in the Jazz game that where the Warriors almost lost that one in Utah, and they had to go to overtime to win the game. So in the regular season, down the stretch, yes, depth can help you. But in the playoffs, no.
Depth helps you. Yeah, it helps you as far as the 6th man goes. Mm-hmm. Because, as you know, like we said, Jay Crowder went down. Evan Turner was there to sort of take the slack. Who was really the MVP last year? It was Iguodala who was the 6th man. That is technically depth, but... You know, as far as the getting contributions from the bench, yeah, that goes down a lot. You know, you expect very little from Livingston and very little from whoever, you know, Maurice Spites and Barbosa.
We've been seeing a lot of Brandon Rush, too, for some reason. Probably because Iguodala's injury, you need a small forward, so here comes Rush, you know?
Yeah, so depth, you really need, you know, like Toronto, Carroll's got, okay, Terrence Ross has been there, and he's been okay, but... Depth only goes so far.
Yeah.
As somebody gets injured, okay, I have an immediate replacement. But once you have to go 2, 3 down the line, okay, now we're sort of, you know, our guy we need to contribute is now in, so who's going to spell him? The guy, our deep reserves.
Let's talk a little bit about that bottom of the West. Where you've got now we're not going to talk about Portland because Portland I think is safe. You know, they're actually only a half game away from where Memphis is. Memphis has been just steadily dropping games. There's a really good chance that Portland might wind up at that 5 seed and play the Clippers while the Grizzlies play the Oklahoma City Thunder. One way or another, Adam, I think we're going to see a zigzag either with the Thunder or the Clippers playing the Grizzlies or the Portland Trailblazers. Let's talk about these 3 teams that are duking it out for 2 spots or the 2 final spots in the West. First of all, what the hell are the Dallas Mavericks? What are they?
Well, we sort of pegged them as they made these trades, and then, well, they'll be fine to half to that midway point, and then they're going to crap out because...
Well, Chandler Parsons got another knee injury, and he's out for the season again. So now they're relying a little bit more on Dirk than they expected in the, down the stretch.
Yeah, and then, like we said, they have no depth, and they started off hot, but we knew they'd fade. And, yeah, now is the time they're fading. Houston, as we've seen, that's just a completely toxic
situation. What about Michael Beasley, though?
Michael Beasley's jacking up every shot he gets, trying to be like, look, I can still play here. Mm-hmm. He always had the talent. It was just his head was the problem.
Montrezl Harrell, give me a dirtiness scale on this, the one that caused the suspension.
I didn't see the play, and I didn't really, I don't understand it really, but...
I mean, that was a pretty harsh suspension. When I saw that, and then I saw the elbow or whatever the hell it was, I was like, really? Like, I think he got, three or four games, I believe?
It was five games for...
I mean, that is... Wow.
But that's that's just that we need to let everyone know you can't touch the ref. And especially, you gave him the harsh sentence because he's an NBA player just down here on assignment. He's not part of the league, so... Uh-huh. We need, it's sort of the, look, you guys need to respect the lower levels as well. Not, I'm an NBA guy, I should get the call. And, like I said, I didn't see the play, but just when I read it, was like, it didn't seem like he was it was just really inadvertent. Mm-hmm. But it was just, again, look, we need to not have this happen again. We need to have control down here. We know our refs are young. We're developing them, too. So they might make a bad call. They might get into the, where they shouldn't be. But it's a message more than anything else.
And then you got the Utah Jazz. I think they're in. I think they're one of the teams that will eventually make it, no matter what.
It all falls down to schedule, and presumably they'll have to play each other probably once. But, they have that one game in, and they are playing extremely hot. So I guess that's a good thing for them. Mm-hmm. Because they don't need another lottery pick on a player they really don't have room for.
And it's a bit of a mess there with Utah because they are a very good team, but they still have some pretty tough ones in front of them. They got home games, but they're against the Spurs and the Clippers. They finish on the road against the Nuggets, and then their last game is probably going to be an important game, and that's the last game for Kobe Bryant in L.A. So you're going to have all the ceremony, all of this, and then the Jazz have to go out there with all this media. And go win a game that might be their most important game of the season. Thank God it's against the Lakers.
Yeah, the Lakers are just completely, we're not going to talk about the mess they have. But this is what happens, we mentioned with teams with no talent. And then Kobe just wants to be Kobe and not help his team. So, and if you don't have the talent to back up that me first attitude, your team is just sort of god awful.
Now, D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young. I don't want to get too much into it because it's already gotten a pretty big blow up. Because once you hit that like TMZ sort of line of questioning with a story, it obviously gets tough to get the lines back in form of, okay, is this a sports story? Is this a celebrity story? Is it even legitimate? Can it cause any kind of ramifications in for the team? But for D'Angelo Russell, first of all, let's be honest, that definitely crossed the line, right?
It did, and it's funny how people want it both ways because, some reporters are comparing it to the Donald Sterling thing, and people are like, well, how is Nick Young not getting more of the how is he sort of coming out unscathed? He's the one who's doing these, he's the one cheating, but you can't
but cheating on your girlfriend, whether it be a famous singer or anybody, cheating on your girlfriend is kind of like going out for golf. I'm not saying that everybody does it, and if you didn't, God bless you, but a lot of people do it. Racist remarks from Donald Sterling talking to his girlfriend or whoever that person was that videotaped it. People have those thoughts deep inside, especially older people that, aren't as progressive in terms of, accepting, other races and other genders or whatever, or things like that. But the thing is, for D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young, that's something where that should stay in the locker room. Those are your peers. That's your teammate.
That also comes down to the, you know, you want to chalk it up as just kids on social media don't know what they're doing, but it's also, this is what happens when you draft one-and-done kids who don't know how to grow up, and the college is like, no, we're not going to bother, you know, we know he's God, so we're not going to try to teach him anything, and the Lakers just, you know, are like, well, do whatever you want, which is obviously the professional attitude. You know, it's like, look, we're not your babysitter, and this is what happens when you have, like, immaturity and really just sort of low IQ.
I do like the people who question, like, well, Kobe's supposed to be the leader here. Why isn't he jumping? Dude, Kobe is taking a free ride here. You know what I'm saying? He mentally checked out of playing basketball, I want to say, probably about, what, 6 months ago?
He checked out the day he said, I'm retiring.
Exactly. That
because
was good. And that was
before that was like, I could do it. All right, I'm going to retire now. Let's have celebrations for me. Mm-hmm. And then once the celebration started happening, he knew it was over. But how is it his responsibility when we all famously remember his transgressions he had?
Oh yeah, he was the town crier for many years with the LA Lakers. He was the one causing a lot of the trouble.
So it's just, a lot of, the kids are just being dumb kids. And if you're smart, that's how you stay in the league. You start becoming a professional. If you just continue to be a bonehead, you'll find yourself in Europe pretty quick.
So Utah, you don't feel as confident about them as I do, right?
Based on talent,
Derek Favors' knee injury kind of scares you a little bit?
Just a little bit, and then... Houston really has no reason not to be in the playoffs.
But there they are, not in the playoffs.
They're currently not in the playoffs, but it's just you have, Dallas might just get a lucky bounce here or there, but it's just professional, veteran professional teams find a way to win. And then the young kids just sort of, the way with Golden State, they had that big lead and then they completely blew it and they blew all their free throws and sort of choked. Mm-hmm. And that's because the young kids don't know what the playoffs are like. They don't know what happens when teams start getting serious.
Now, we always see these kind of miscellaneous performances from the losing teams or teams that are already kind of out of the running. Even teams with players that bring in fill-ins and they have, great games. I just saw one with Seth Curry, Steph's brother, with the Kings where he scored 17 points in one quarter. Have you noticed any kind of particular, and it doesn't just have to be necessarily one game, just these losing teams like the Pelicans, the Nuggets, the Kings even, the Milwaukee Bucks. Have you seen one guy in the last, let's say week, maybe month, where you've noticed something different or a performance where you said, oh, wow, this could be a great platform for next season?
Well, the one player would have to be your boy from Cincinnati, now on Brooklyn. Was it Kilpatrick?
Sean Kilpatrick.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He came out of where, really?
Well, do you know how he got the craziest part about last year? It was the funniest story. They actually signed him literally off the street in Minnesota because they had...
He was in town and they were
tanking. They had injuries. Somebody couldn't make the game. And they said, hey, can you play? And he's like, can I play? I was in the D-League this year.
Yeah, I remember that. Because, they played at the Knicks. They're like, we need somebody who's already on the East Coast. Who can literally
exactly.
Here
exactly.
An hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just like, he's like the good story, which, will with college, that might be why people are going to jump and go, well, I could go to the D-League, and all I need is a 10-day contract to show up my worth. Mm-hmm. He's been doing stuff. Axel Toupain in Denver has sort of, been on the stat sheet.
Yeah, I've barely seen him. You probably have a better idea of him than I do.
Well, he was on the Raptors D-League team, and I was like, it was always one of those very anomalous things. I saw just a player from Europe who just went to the D-League.
Go ahead.
No, you don't usually see that. That's just always, college kids who are just, I can make, I don't want to accept the fact. But as far as the season players who have been good under the radar, which, we'll get to in our end of the season, awards wrap up, but I would have to say it's Derek Williams, former number two pick who...
With the Knicks.
Yeah, and he's sort of been the...
Had a really nifty alley-oop reverse dunk in one of those games I saw. Yeah.
He really just sort of developed his game. Like, look, I know I'm not going to be that superstar people try to make me out to be, mm-hmm. And, you know, the opposite of Beasley, who was just like, I'm still the star. I'm still the man. I can do whatever I want. And
the two that I've definitely noticed past the trade deadline, and it one had to do with a trade and the other had to do with a change in position. Giannis Antetokounmpo was put in at point guard, and he has been playing out of his mind. I think he's had 6 triple-doubles in the last month.
Something like that. That's just wraps up Milwaukee in a nutshell. Is
the craziest part though about Giannis is that even watching him last year, you would say that's not really a point guard. That looks more like a small forward type. But somehow they put him in that position and it kind of works.
Yeah, it's just what the hell is he still? It's 3 years in and we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It also spells how horrible Carter Williams is.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose your
well, he
you
also had the job. Hip injury that took
yeah, the
out
hip
the
injury.
Season.
And,
yeah,
you know he did nothing this season, and then you lose your job to your small forward.
That's true. He didn't do a lot, while he was healthy, to help himself. You know?
So it's just that's just crazy how he's having all this. It's just you don't know how it works, and you're watching it. It's like he's not a point guard, but then again, he's taking the ball. You can't put a 6 foot 6 foot 1 guard on him.
And the other one, and by trade, and I'll say this, that might have been one of those trades where it was addition by subtraction with Orlando, and that's Aaron Gordon. You know, getting the opportunity to start, a lot of people had kind of his name like right off of their lips because of the dunk contest performance against Zach LaVine, but Gordon has played very well now that Harris has been shipped to Detroit, giving him a few more minutes. Now, we talked about this just now with Cody Zeller. Just because you get the opportunities doesn't mean you deserve the opportunities. But I think Aaron Gordon has played pretty well.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Zach LaVine up in Minnesota. You get the minutes, but you're just a raw talent. You need to be on the court to sort of hone your skills and see what we can do. Are you just a dunker, or can you, do other things about it? We always knew he was that scrappy, he could rebound either, but now that he's developing a shot, okay, we can see he's going to be dangerous.
Defensively, he has potential to be a force. Potential.
Potentially.
But, he does have, total brain farts where he just forgets. But that's Orlando, where they got really – they're still very, very young. Even after trading Tobias, I think they're still, one of the 5 youngest teams in the NBA. But like you were just talking about, Hezonja has been playing a lot more. He's shown a little bit. They've got a lot of potential there. But like you were saying, we'll talk about that as we, get into the offseason. We sort of discuss a lot of these teams. But those were 2 particular players in the Eastern Conference in the last month where I said, ooh. The eyes kind of got big when I watched them, thinking, oh, this is something that these 2 teams can build on, and they absolutely need to build on it, given the fact that they don't have much behind them, outside of losing games. Now let's kind of just get into the nitty-gritty of it with the NBA regular season closing out, and just generalities about the season. Have you kind of noticed anything in particular with whether it be the 3-point shooting, with the increased scoring, probably from the 3-point shooting, for the mind you, or maybe just the fact that teams are kind of slowing down, games are getting more intense. Have you noticed anything different, in the last week or so, or are you anticipating any kind of change in the culture?
Well, of course, I'm anticipating when the 3 start going down, you realize, you're actually going to start playing defense, and you can't just jack up a 25-footer by yourself.
Yeah,
because it really doesn't matter. It's the second quarter, but no, it was like the Christmas Day games where, the Cleveland one. Where it's like, well, both teams are horrible because they're kind of trying now, and you're going to see that. But the one thing I've noticed is with this new 3-point culture, it's a lot of lazy basketball. It's just let's pass it and shoot a 3, and now it's like there was one game. It was like 60 or 70 threes were taken. It's just like you're not.
That had to be a Rockets game, huh? Or was it Portland?
It might have been like
Houston. Houston is prolific for launching threes this year.
It might have been like a Houston and Golden State game or something.
Okay.
Where it's just both teams are just jacking up. It's like, well, that's not basketball. You're just playing a glorified pickup game.
But here's the thing. Well, let me play devil's advocate. That's shooting the ball. That's a skill. And it's sort of coming back to, well, is Curry a true superstar if he doesn't do much outside of, taking threes? Now, that's very, very, like, absent-minded if you put that point of view out there, because Curry does so much more for his team than just shoot the ball. But there are guys out there who really just shoot the ball. Are you saying that they sort of lack the skills of an average or above-average NBA player?
Well, that was always the case. Is you're that, you know, the thing on Kyle Korver was all he could do is shoot threes. He doesn't really play defense, doesn't really provide much to your team. He'll just sit in the corner and just jack up threes. And there was always that one guy on your team who didn't do anything but shoot threes. And as you've seen with the NCAA playoffs, they just abandon the threes altogether, and all they try to do is just run in the lane and try to do a bad layup because the three is sort of taken away.
Well, there are teams that have figured out how to space, but they have to be, like Villanova, you've got to be so committed to it that you could literally run those sets in your sleep.
Yeah, but that's a team concept. When you're
that's true.
You're just, you know, running down the court, and then, like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, with Curry taking that 35-foot that went in, yeah, it's great. He's making every shot, but there's no reason you should be on a team, and that's the play you draw up. It's
like a 48-minute heat check.
Yeah. It's just a glorified warm-up where it's just, okay, get some exercise, go play against each other. We don't really want foot contact. Okay, then just go shoot threes and practice rebounding. Okay. You know, that's what I've noticed. And then it's like they always say, well, playoffs, well, the basketball's not that good. Well, yeah, because now the athlete actually utilized the players you weren't because you just jacked up threes all season.
Anthony Davis, right move to not play in the Olympics?
If he's legitimately hurt, then yes.
Okay.
We don't know how. He claims he's been injured.
Well, it's supposed to be the knee and the shoulder.
You know, the thing you've seen from previous Olympics is those players come back tired at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Chris Paul has already said in an interview, I'm probably not going to play.
Yeah, he's too old, and that would just take...
Yeah, well, we just talked about it. His twilight's closing, but is he himself sort of recognizing... Once you, because here's the thing, these people, like, fans kind of get this, like, sense of, like, in the summer, players are about the same as they were when the season ended. That is not true. Like, there is definitely a downtime in that off season. You know, even if there's an Olympic Games, there is definitely a downtime between the end of the regular season and then the beginning of the next season where they come back and you can definitely see, okay, they're not as quick to the punch as they were last year, you know? So there's clearly a difference. Maybe Paul is just realizing, you know, this is probably the last, I'm losing my uppercut, but I still got my jab, you know, and I don't want to waste it on the Olympics because I want to save that energy.
Well, Paul, you know, he already won too, so he has nothing to prove. If he lost, you know, the thing, we'll have an Olympic preview before the Olympics come out.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, we've been threatening that small forward one, so we'll have an Olympic preview in December when it's all said and done. But this year's crop doesn't seem – Spain's not the hitter it once was, and it doesn't seem like there's going to be a big competition as there was, you know, 4 years ago.
Okay, you had a beef about some of the NBA draft entries that have been flooding in. Now, I got to preface this by saying the withdrawal date has been moved or pushed forward to – I believe it's late May, May 25th. So now if you don't hire an agent and you enter your name into the NBA draft out of college or junior college or from internationals, you have all the way until late next month to pull your name out. You can even participate in the NBA scout combine, do your measurements, perform in the scrimmage, and if you don't get a good vibe, as long as you don't hire an agent, you can go back to school. You know, a lot of these coaches were trying to, in the college ranks, were, you know, facetiously trying to rail against it because they couldn't anticipate the number of red shirts and scholarships they could offer because they didn't anticipate a player returning, which I think is a bunch of horseshit. Because if a player goes into the draft and they're willing to go back to school, are you not going to take them? You know what I'm saying? But there were some of these players that you saw entries for that just like absolutely shocked you.
Well, I have no problem. That's it's a great thing, being extending that window, because as we've seen with last year, players just getting, and every year, there's always a couple players get bad advice, and it's like, well, why did you do that? And if you go in and you say, I'm not hiring an agent, that's the smart move. I would do that too. I'd be like, well, so what do you guys think about me? What can I improve on? It's a great way to get feedback from somebody other than your coach, you know, an independent professional view. Like, what can I do to get to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I could develop my game. But you see people like, you know, I'm declaring and I've hired an agent. Well, why?
Didn't the entire Kentucky team, didn't John Calipari say that his entire Kentucky team was going to go pro just so that they could try out the combine, and then if they wanted to go back to school, a lot of them could come back?
Well, yeah, he's there.
Or is that a publicity stunt?
It kind of was a publicity stunt, and that's one of the reasons, like, you know, as much as you like Coach Cal, there's a lot of reasons, like that one in particular, a lot of people don't like him because it's just sort of a, you know, it's great for the kids. Well, you don't just, even the walk-ons are going to do that. Like, well, that's just stupid now. And,
like I'm looking at some of these names, and these are the ones without an agent. Like, Abdul Malik Abu at NC State. Okay, that's fine. Ben Bentel at Providence, that's fine. Antonio Blakeney, McDonald's All-American. By the way, I was watching McDonald's All-American game. Frank Jackson, Jason Tatum, and Harry Giles, who did not play because he's got the knee injury. We've talked about him in a previous episode. Duke is going to be some kind of good if they get Grayson Allen back. That's going to be a dangerous team, but let me keep
going. Even if they don't get Allen back, they don't, in this one-and-done culture, who's really going to take him down?
It's going to be it's going to be like Tyus Jones, Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winfield.
Yeah, that's what I saw from that game as well. But, yeah. You know, if you're going without an agent, that's cool.
Yeah.
But
Mekhi Mason at Yale is going to test the water. Now, when I say test the waters, I mean no free agent or no agent. That's when I say that, that's sort of my code word for it. But guys like, you know, Isaiah Briscoe, James Webb, Isaiah Whitehead at Seton Hall, Caleb Swanigan at Purdue. These are the guys that signed. Tim Quarterman at LSU, along with Ben Simmons, which was no shock there, but Quarterman was almost funny. I actually laughed out loud when I saw that. Wayne Selden, no, not really a surprise. Was that a surprise for you?
No.
Okay, number one at Kansas. Jamal Murray, no shock. DeJounte Murray and Marquise Chris at Washington, those, the diaper dandies, went pro, and you liked them, but you just thought a little too early.
Yeah, well, with Murray, he can't do anything. He just has the intangibles and the size, but he can't pass and he can't shoot. So it's just, you know, you have that, but, you know, like Coach Cal said, just go back there real quickly.
Yeah.
You could put your name in, and, well, if you don't get invited to the combine, that gives you your answer.
Yeah.
Well, then why are you wasting everybody's time by being a walk-on and putting your name in? It's just stupid.
I'm just looking at names here, like Dallas Moore at North Florida, Dedrick Lawson, who's a good player at Memphis, Peter Jock at Iowa, not an NBA player in my eyes, not right now, Jalen Reynolds at Xavier, no. Trevor Thompson at center out of Ohio State, no. Like, I'm seeing names where I'm like, if they get drafted in the NBA draft, that's a damning of the college game. That's all I have to say about that one.
It's more of a, well, if they get invited to the combine, be like, what?
They will get, you know what? You're right. You know, if they don't get the invite, then the writing's on the wall. But we have seen guys that didn't get invited to the combine. They did private workouts, you know, during the playoff season with some of these teams that aren't in the playoffs anymore. And then they impress, they get good feedback, and then their handler says, you know what, you might want to stay in. I got a good feeling that you might be a second-round guy. But some of these players, if they are told you're only going to be a second-round guy, they are gone. They are not going to keep their name in the draft.
The landscape has changed. Sometimes, okay, you need to go pro because of your family, and you can make good money in Europe. So
or you're just unhappy with the school that you're at. You know?
You're unhappy, you can't really transfer. And
You might have a situation like who was the most recent one? Oh, Spike Albrecht, where they're going to make you wait a year even though you're a grad transfer because they don't want you to play for a Big Ten school. You know, like Big Ten has a rule that overrides the NCAA, stupidly, that they can ban any transfer from going to another Big Ten school. You have to go outside of conference.
That is very strange how that could.
That's a very ignorant, sad decision. I can't. You know, Jared Otov actually fought that and won, but that was before the Big Ten instituted that rule when he went from Wisconsin to Iowa. But let's talk about the schedule in the NBA. Just to grab on that, and then we'll talk about maybe the national championship game, and we'll have a little bit of a surprise in there for the wrestling fans. Pelicans Nets. I'm actually going to literally go through the games because, you know, we usually don't do this, but with the urgency kicking in, we're just going to try to gauge what we got here. New Orleans at Brooklyn. You got Charlotte at Cleveland. Might be interesting. Thunder at the Rockets on ABC. You've got the Clippers at home against the Washington Wizards. You got the Memphis Grizzlies on the road against Orlando. Memphis has been struggling. They really need that win badly. The Jazz are going to go to Phoenix to play the Suns, who have won 20 games. They haven't played terribly, you know, but they, you know, not exactly like the best outing for them. And the Bulls go to Milwaukee. The Bulls, where are we at with the Bulls?
Well, it's funny how we sort of, in bold predictions, you know, we sort of said, oh, they're going to crumble, and Hoiberg wasn't the answer.
Nope. And then you've got Portland at Golden State. We'll see if they can play spoiler or start a two-game losing streak for the Golden State Warriors, which would make people, everybody collectively freak out. And then Kobe gets his last game against the Celtics late at night in L.A., where Boston's going to L.A. after they turn that around with the win over Golden State on that Friday before. Tuesday, the most notable games, Pistons at Heat. You talked about how the Tobias Harris trade has worked out pretty well for the Pistons, along with Marcus Morris playing a lot of good minutes. So they got a decent front court there now that Tobias Harris is there.
Yeah, they've rounded out their team, and you know we've always questioned Van Gundy, like what is he doing up there? But his picks seem to be working.
Spurs at the Jazz. That's kind of interesting. The Jazz sometimes defensively give teams trouble when they go to Utah. We'll see if that happens this time with San Antonio. Obviously, San Antonio is unbeatable at home. We'll see if they drop a game on the road. You got Cleveland at Milwaukee. Chicago at Memphis is interesting because both of those teams are in such a bad way, and we'll see what happens there. And then the Lakers play the Clippers. Wednesday, you've got you've got the Cavs and the Pacers. You've got the Rockets at the Dallas Mavericks. So you got a divisional rivalry there and a game where, I mean, that win might really be the separation between one team making the Western Conference playoffs and one team not doing it. I know you hate these things. And then let me see here what we got here with the with the Thursday outing, because you got TNT. Have you noticed that they've had more Thursday games than they usually do? They usually had Thursday games where there was only maybe like two on TNT and then one that was not. And now they've really expanded it to where there's like literally like five or six games on Thursday nights.
Yeah, I don't know why, but my guess would just be because it was used to be like the same four teams would play every Thursday, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're sort of just giving us a little more variety.
Yeah, for the league pass, maybe.
For the league pass, A and B, it sort of gives players a rest. If you have three people playing Thursday, it's a little less back-to-backs if you're going to throw them into Saturday or Sunday, you know, more Sunday games now with the ABC stuff.
Yeah, I think it
sort of spreads it out a little bit.
I don't think we're going to see Toronto play the Hawks in the playoffs, but they're going to play on Thursday. The TNT games are the Bulls at the Heat and the San Antonio Spurs at the Golden State Warriors. You think the Raptors are secretly hoping that the Bulls don't make it since they've lost all four times to them in the regular season?
No, this season's different.
So you don't buy into the idea that because of the first round failures that it might get into their head and the Bulls' experience might outweigh the Raptors?
I don't think that would change because this year's Raptors team is different, and sadly, this year's Bulls team isn't different.
Knicks Sixers on Friday.
Oh, I'm gonna be tuned in on that.
The Bucks go to TD Garden. Will you be there?
I will be on a plane.
Oh, where are you be going?
I will be in Russia. So.
God, you see, you go to Canada for curling. Now you're going to Russia to watch God knows what. You went to Ireland.
I will be in Russia, and hopefully I make it back.
International man of mystery, just like Giannis Antetokounmpo. The Wizards at the Pistons. Pivotal must-win game for the Washington Wizards. I'll just leave that one there. Pacers at Raptors, interesting. Spurs at Nuggets. Nuggets have been scrappy at home. I think they beat the Warriors at home about a month ago, so we'll see. The Spurs usually pick on bad teams on the road, so we'll see. And then the Clippers go to Utah. And then you round out Saturday, Celtics, Hawks, Warriors, Grizzlies. You know, it feels like the Warriors have played the Grizzlies like seven times, and Warriors have won every single time this year. and then the Cavs play the Bulls on ABC in Chicago, and you know, it's an interesting slate. There's a lot of really cool games there because of how urgent it's going to be for a lot of these teams and how precarious their positions are in the playoffs. Where you look forward to them and you say, well, I don't know how important that game's going to be, but when you look back on those games, you know, depending on how the playoffs shake out, you're going to say, man, if that team had won that game, everything would have been different.
Well, that's pretty much comes down to every Brooklyn loss, like every Brooklyn wins. Like, how did we lose to Brooklyn? If we won that game, we would have been, you know, a four seed instead of the five. And you know, that's why every game sort of does matter. You need to beat the teams you're supposed to.
Breaking news: Adam Murray just said on the NBA Team podcast, "Every game matters." It might be the first time you said that all year long.
In the grand scheme of thing, you're supposed to beat the teams, you know, you're supposed to beat the bad teams. You're supposed to win.
Well, no one's a fan of the regular season when you're just trying to struggle through, like, December and January and February. And even March, you know, there's kind of like, it gets a little more important, but it does feel like, you know, you could drop a game or two. You can hit a bit of a losing streak and pick yourself up. But in April, it's like, you know, unless you're totally set in your playoff position, you've got to win. I mean, you've almost literally got to win all the games.
Well, it's like being back in school. It's like the paper's not due till next Monday. Okay, that's cool. I'll work a little bit on it, and then next thing you know, Sunday night. What the fuck? Why do I got to do all this work still? And
I wasn't a master procrastinator, but I did notice that I seem to get a better performance out of myself under pressure.
Well, yeah, that's the same thing now is, oh, well, we could, you know, okay, it's, let's say, you know, Boston's playing, you know, a comparable team. Let's say, you know, Atlanta. Okay, you could go 2-2. If you go 3-1, that's fine. But there's no reason you should go 2-2 against Philly or 3-1 against Philly or lose to Brooklyn or, you know, split against the Knicks. That's why I mean by every game matters is you could lose a game or two. You could drop one to teams. You could be like, okay, I could buy that, but you know, oh, look, we got blown out by Minnesota. What?
And those are the ones, like when the Spurs lost to the Pelicans. Like, it's like, it's not like, now the Pelicans were playing for their playoff lives, so they had something to play for. It wasn't like the Spurs lost to a bad team, but the Spurs losing that game totally changed the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the difference between being 42-40 now and 40-42.
And that's the difference, you know, for a team like Houston or Utah, that's the difference, you know, especially Chicago. Wouldn't you think Chicago would love to have some of these wins back that they've been dropping for the last 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah, or the complete turmoil in the beginning of Houston when they quit on their coach, and did it get really better? No, not really. They're still the same Houston team we expected. Mm-hmm. It's just, well, had you not quit on your coach and given up
those
games.
Did J.B. Bickerstaff call them a broken team? Wasn't he quoted as saying that? I mean, wow. Okay, Adam Murray, get on your soapbox about the Final Four. You watched the Oklahoma-Villanova game, and you did not like what you saw.
This is the way the whole tournament's been. Everybody's been like, well, oh, it's so much exciting. Like, well, no, this is what happens when the entire college is just full of bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
You keep the one star in check, and then nobody else on that team is good enough to do literally anything.
You're alluding to Buddy Hield and the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, and the same thing. You take down really Malachi and
Richardson for Syracuse or Orange, yeah.
And then, you know, it was funny because in the beginning of the season we had that the college preview, and we're like, well, how come North Carolina hasn't sent out NBA prospects lately? Have they sort of crapped out? It's like, well, now they're the team to beat because they have a complete team. Villanova has no NBA prospects, but they have a complete team. You get these one-and-done guys, they all disappear. There's zero, really, you know, NBA of the NBA prospects in the, you know, the Final Four.
And I still stand by that. I think North Carolina is the most talented team that was in the tournament altogether. But I think Bryce Johnson will make it. I think Kennedy Meeks will make it because he's a low post scoring guy. But I don't see like a super duper talented team. I think you have a point there.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, they're the top team and they still came in with five or six losses. It's like they're not. In any other year, they would be destroyed by the top teams.
Oh,
it's
if they played Kentucky, they would be in trouble. Like last year's Kentucky team or Wisconsin, yeah. They would be in trouble.
And sure. That's the difference. It's just like, well, you're like, wow, Villanova, you know, they shot less. I was like, no, Oklahoma didn't show up. It wasn't, there's this big, you know, dome myth.
Or may have been both. You know, maybe Oklahoma's defense wasn't great all year long. You know, the Villanova shot 70%, but Villanova's been shooting the ball really well the entire tournament. Maybe they're just hot.
They're just hot. And then you watch Oklahoma really made no defensive rotations. They let
Their defensive performance in the second half was beyond awful. Beyond awful.
Yeah, it was like, you know, my wife was like, how did the game go? I'm like, oh, Oklahoma came within 9 and then lost by 40-something. She's like, how is that happen? Like, they're not good.
It's literally one of those scores where, you know, like a random AP wire will show up and you read it and you're like, huh? Like, it's that bad. Like, you could actually read that on the national news and people will be like, really? That happened? You know?
You know, you're pressing the inbounds. They just do the home run pass up, easy layup.
Yeah.
They do it again, easy layup. Oh, home run pass.
Well,
easy
Syracuse
layup.
Did the press on Virginia and it worked because Virginia's offense got exposed badly in those last 10 minutes where they just couldn't handle being sped up, which is really the fault of Tony Bennett. And I really like Tony Bennett. I think he's a great defensive mind. But offensively, when you cannot, and man, I was killing on Twitter about this. How can you not fucking teach your team how to beat a press and get a layup on 3-on-2s and 2-on-1s and complete those plays? How can you be dumb enough to not? This is a fucking college basketball team at the highest level. How do you not finish those plays? I don't understand. North Carolina had no problem doing it with their athletes.
You know, the same thing like with Northern Iowa. How do you not practice an inbound play where your player is standing literally underneath the basket?
That was hilarious. We didn't even elaborate on that one, but he tried to bounce it off his knee, and it just bounced in the air like on a dead spot, and then they stole it and laid it in to tie it. Really bad. He could have literally rolled the ball Magic Johnson style across the court, and time would have ran out.
Yeah, it's just the way I would sum up this season was just one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches were just said, we're not going to try. You're going to all declare anyways.
So you don't like the 4-out-1-in in college, like you saw with Oklahoma and Villanova, where they take a lot of threes and make a lot of threes?
Well, they made a lot of threes, but it's just there was no – Oklahoma never showed up. They didn't play defense. They didn't
– Is that an aping of the NBA culture? Because North Carolina doesn't take threes, but there they are in the title game. But Syracuse, Villanova, and Oklahoma did. I mean, did you like that style play?
They took threes because Villanova doesn't really have the size to play a small ball. They've always been that way.
Well, Syracuse had the size, but they were so inefficient on offense that it was almost like the three was a bailout.
Pretty much, that was the only way we know how to get in is that's a quick shot. We're not going to waste 20 seconds trying to get to this set that's going to fail anyways. Let's just jack one up really quickly. It's just, You know, I don't want to say Syracuse sort of gave up, but yeah, it seemed desperate to me.
And North Carolina versus Villanova it feels epic for me because I know how good those teams have been throughout the entire season, and it's the best front court versus the best back court. There's a lot to chew on there. First of all, do you have a winner? And are you anticipating anything special out of it?
For me, there's no reason North Carolina shouldn't win by 10.
Okay.
Because they're just a complete team. Villanova just has hot shooting, but North Carolina, I think they're deep. If they decide to play defense, which it looks like
their rebounding is so good inside. I mean, it is hard to score on them inside. It is all that cutting and all that penetrating. It's not going to really work that well against North Carolina because their bigs are so good at passing too. Yeah, and they can beat a zone. I mean, we already saw that against Syracuse. They can beat a zone.
It's funny though, watching the Final Four. You know, the two teams that were doing touch passes are the two teams that destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, I just need to try to run in the lane and just do a floater. And
head fakes. I mean, something as simple as a head fake.
Yeah. And these are things that are taught. And these are things that you have to practice to work on. You don't just naturally do it. And, you know, the better coach teams are the ones who won. So
yeah, it's ironic because you got – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, just again, there's no reason North Carolina shouldn't win by 10.
But you're anticipating a great game, kind of like Illinois and North Carolina in 05 when they were like two great teams and North Carolina sort of overwhelmed them, but the game was great and you can appreciate the effort from both teams. Do you expect that kind of game or do we have potential for a stinker?
I just expect an average. You know, they both play hard, but the score always seemed to stay the same.
That's in Houston where you have that one struggling Western Conference team trying to stay in the playoffs. And then in Dallas or Arlington, wherever they call it there, Jerry's World, you know, you got the Dallas Mavericks. And we're having WrestleMania 32. Now, we never talk too much about wrestling. We allude to it every now and then. It's obviously a wrestling-centric podcast network, and we appreciate all of our listeners on Place to Be Nation that listened to us and have helped us with our listeners, and we hope you continue with us for the uh, for the playoffs as we get into the nitty-gritty, but this is the biggest show of the year, so we're going to have to do our obligatory Who You Got WrestleMania predictions, and I'll go ahead and I'll throw them to Adam, and I'll see what he says. Let's start kind of at the bottom and go kind of climb to the top. You've got the New Day. Do you know who the New Day is?
Nope.
Okay, that's Kofi Kingston, Big E, and
Zayn. Oh, are they the black three count?
The three black. They're three. They're both African American. They like to wear unicorn horns and kind of be very silly, kind of heels, but the fans really love them. And they are wrestling against the League of Nations, which is Alberto Del Rio, Sheamus, King Barrett or Bad News Barrett, whatever they're calling him today, and Rusev. So who's the winner there?
Didn't Sheamus used to be on top? How did he fall so?
Because they wanted a bigger name to wrestle Roman Reigns, and they wanted, so they put the title off of Sheamus. This is like the third time this has happened to the guy.
I thought he was supposed to be one of the top guys, and like everyone loved him because he's like the underdog, and now he's relegated to this.
I don't even know how to explain it, but basically they put sometimes in WrestleMania, they sort of lump into these roles because they won them on WrestleMania, but they don't have a top spot for them. But yeah, you got a point, but give me a winner.
I'll go with the black three count.
The black three count. Divas Championship. Charlotte, Ric Flair's daughter, versus Sasha Banks, who's awesome, versus Becky Lynch, who's also pretty cool. Have you watched any of them, and do you have a winner?
I'll go with Ric Flair's daughter.
Ric Flair's daughter. And then we got, I think there's some very random Divas match. One of them has Lana, who's Rusev's, like, valet, and the other one has Brie Bella in it, whose husband Daniel Bryan just retired. So give me a winner to that one.
There's two women's matches?
There's two women's matches. It's a five-hour show because they got a one-hour pre-show that's going to be on the USA Network and then the four-hour actual WrestleMania show on the WWE Network.
Okay.
And I guarantee you they will still be pressed for time for the main event.
Of course they will, but that sort of explains it. I don't.
You don't
it
care.
Doesn't matter.
Prediction. There's rumors of Steve Austin, John Cena, and The Rock all participating, but they won't be wrestling. So what
in
are they?
In the women's match?
Huh?
In the women's match?
No. Just in general. Give me an idea. Who interferes in what match or who does what?
What happened to Cena?
He got a torn rotator cuff. He was supposed to wrestle The Undertaker, and they had to switch places.
Oh, so he'll show up, but Austin, I don't. There's no reason for him to. And if The Rock has a new movie out, he'll show up.
Well, The Rock has been promoted to appear for months, so he's going to do something. We just don't know what.
Hey, he'll
now Roman Reigns is his cousin or nephew, I think. So you know, so you got that connection. Maybe he can help out Roman, try to give him a bit of a face pop there in the main event.
He might just come out, do a 2-minute interview, and then just. Yeah. Leave.
Chris Jericho versus AJ Styles. I love AJ Styles. I don't know if you ever watched him at TNA, but he's fantastic.
I remember him back when, you know, he was in the, not minor leagues, but the independent circuit. And
yeah.
You know, he's the next guy to come up. Like, oh, he's talented. Jericho semi-retired anyways.
He does. He kind of steps in and out. And then when they need him, he shows up. And they've had so many injuries that they've brought in Jericho as kind of an assistant, like to kind of help out. And when Styles came in, he was like, okay, I want to work with AJ Styles. And so he's been definitely playing the heel in this situation that AJ's face. So who you got here winning the match?
I'll go with Styles.
You go with Styles to win his first WrestleMania match.
Yeah, they need to develop some new talent, new blood.
Ryback versus Kalisto for the United States Championship. Kalisto is a luchador.
The only thing I know about Ryback is he stole Rhino's outfits.
Yeah, Rhino and Rob Van Dam. Now he's going with the Goldberg look. He's got the black tights now.
The onesie.
Yeah, the onesie's gone. It's the Goldberg outfit.
Then I'll go with the other guy, the luchador.
Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose in a no-holds-barred street fight. What's the difference between no-holds-barred and a street fight?
I'm surprised. They just add ladders, tables, and chairs. And
mm-hmm. Well, there's going to be a lot of extracurriculars there. Yeah, Dean Ambrose was one of the members of the Shield.
I'm going to go with Lesnar.
Lesnar, yeah, that's safe. Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match.
It'll be The Undertaker.
Is that very, like, Nintendo 64 WWF-ish?
That's very attitude era of let's just throw gimmicky stuff in there.
Yeah.
Like, unless, you know, I don't, you know, the testament to The Undertaker is just, the dude has to be in his 50s now, and he's still doing this, and, you know, it's amazing how his body has held up. And there's no Shane McMahon, if they do it, it'll be some gimmicky screw job ending where somebody's...
So you don't mind if The Undertaker loses since he already lost?
This isn't like the stipulation, like he'll be out of WrestleManias forever. So, yeah, if he's going to retire, okay, but you're going to lose to Shane. Like, I don't see this being a straight match. There's going to be some gimmickry going on.
A ladder match for the Intercontinental title. I hope I get all the participants right because I'm not staring at the card, to be honest with you. Kevin Owens is the champion. You've got Zack Ryder, Sin Cara, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, and I might be missing one more guy. So who you got winning this one?
I will go with The Miz over Dolph Ziggler, as those are the only two people I know.
Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are fantastic. If you, I'll say this, they had an NXT show, which is their training ground, and they had an NXT show in Dallas on Friday, and Sami Zayn wrestled a guy named Shinsuke Nakamura from that they had signed over from New Japan Pro Wrestling, and it is about the best damn match you've ever seen. The whole show's great, but that one in particular is a must-watch. So Sami got the call-up, and this is one of his first big matches he's going to be wrestling in this ladder match. I'll go with Sami Zayn. Main event time. Roman Reigns.
You don't even mention it'll be Triple H. Triple H will not lose. I don't even know if he's
you don't,
in the
well,
match.
Well, Triple H kind of got the title because some people call it a political hit. I don't believe that. But I think that they wanted to give the belt to some big name, and they had so many guys like Seth Rollins and John Cena and all these other guys dropped due to injuries. So they gave the belt to Triple H so that they could put a name on it and then have Roman Reigns chase for the title, even though he's still getting booed.
It doesn't matter. Triple H couldn't, you know, like I said, for all I know, he wasn't even in the main event, but he would somehow find a way to be in and make himself win because...
So you think Triple H, who is the COO of the company, head of creative, and really doesn't have too much of a reason to have to keep the title past WrestleMania outside of the fact that their roster is thin and they don't think Roman should... They don't want Roman to get booed out of the building, I guess. So you're saying that Triple H will defend the championship at WrestleMania in his 40s.
Well, he's not. Okay. Why would, you know, isn't he seem to be like an 80-time world champion because he just seems to book himself to keep winning, which is just the, you know, the McMahon way.
But do you have a problem with that?
That's the, you know, sort of, not one of the reasons I sort of stopped watching it was just the same, you know, McMahon does his thing and then we'll just keep booking ourselves.
Yeah, and look who's in the semi-main event. Shane
people
Moe,
want to see us. Man. People yeah. want to see us. People want to see us. And it's like, no, it's always, when it came to the main event, I really, you know, I was more always into the undercard than the main event because that was where all the talent was and all the hunger. I don't want to see, like, you know, 40-year-old guys with wrestling for the 85th time.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, there's no excitement in that. And
I don't. Who is the Roman Reigns of the NBA? A guy who is obviously talented. He can handle his own, but the fans just aren't gravitating to him. And he's being pushed through the moon.
The first thing that came to mind was Carmelo.
I think it's Klay Thompson. I think Klay's good enough, but he gets rammed down people's throats because he rides Curry's coattails.
No, that's just always your part of the successful tag team. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, like,
well, he was with the team in the Shield, and a lot of people are like, well, I love Roman Reigns. He's like the powerhouse of the Shield. But the moment the Shield broke up, the indie mindset got into this mode of, oh, well, I like Seth Rollins because he's the workhorse, and I like Dean Ambrose because he's crazy, but I don't really like Roman Reigns because he's not very charismatic. You know what I'm saying? And so they just it turned into a bit of a what's the word, like a phenomenon where it's like, okay, we don't like Roman Reigns. He's the company's choice, not our choice.
Well, no, yeah, I said like with Melo, it was the same thing in, like, you know, Denver when he was out there. He got more media attention than he should, and it's like, well, why are we talking about him?
I mean, is the league in a position where they can choose a guy even though they're not supposed to be partial to teams, where they can be partial to stars? where they say, this is the guy that we want. You know, like,
of course. Isn't that all what TNT and ABC is? ABC just, we joke about that.
It was the same 7 or 8 teams, yeah.
It was the same, and it's just like, you know, who's on TNT this week? The Bulls. Well, they're horrible and should not be on TV. How are the Lakers on every week? Because that way we build stars. In 2-3 years, we're going to see, you know, we saw more New Orleans games this year because of Anthony Davis. We're going to keep seeing that. If they want to build the next stars, that's how you do it. And you could force it down people's throats. And obviously, you know, the WWE is hurt from, who is it, Daniel Bryan?
Daniel Bryan's retirement.
You know, who said, my body can't take it. And then, you know, I think everybody was sort of, because everybody, as much as, you know, from what I've heard, the WWE didn't want to do much with him, but the fans just loved him.
Yeah, Dr. Joe Maroon, who's there, you know, who also worked with the NFL for years, he would not medically clear him. He would not medically clear him. So, and he was under contract, so Vince basically said, okay, we'll give you time to decide, but you're just not going to be able to get cleared. And Daniel Bryan finally decided, okay, I'm going to retire, and he retired in his hometown, Seattle, on Raw.
You know, who would they replace him with? You could try to push Reigns. That was just like, well, if the fans aren't buying it, and from with, you know, it's like they don't like him as a heel, they don't like him as a face, they're just completely indifferent to him, and maybe unfairly so, but.
Yeah, and you feel that way about Melo, that he's sort of unfairly criticized because he got pushed so hard, but you can appreciate the work at the end of the day.
He's one of the few mid-range players in the NBA, and he's still lethal from where he is. And
great front court player, too.
Yeah, and do we talk about... No, it's just all about, you know, the Knicks and stuff, and, you know, how dysfunctional the team is. Like, well, he had no part in that. He didn't say, you know, hire these shitty coaches and make bad decisions and trade all your picks away.
And who's AJ Styles? Who's the shiny new toy of the WWE or the NBA? Is it Carl Anthony Towns?
I think it's Towns.
He's incredible, man. Like, I've been watching him the last 2 weeks. He somehow got better, you know? I thought he didn't play any. I thought he hit a ceiling as a rookie and that things would kind of sort of, like, deteriorate as the games meant less and less, but not Towns. I mean,
well, that's the thing is, like, you know, high basketball IQ, he is getting better. You see Jahlil Okafor, he's just, oh, another fight here, up the spat with management.
We've seen it with Jabari Parker, too, in Milwaukee.
Yeah. It doesn't, you know, talent is one thing, but if you want to learn and get better, the same thing with Buddy Hield at Oklahoma, who's like, I'm going to get better, I'm going to keep working on it. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference.
Yeah, and the idea that draft stock can drop from one bad game is like, I don't know, it's so ignorant. Everybody has a bad game. Now, is it good to have your worst game against, you know, elite competition in the tournament? No, it shows some holes, but I don't think the NBA really cares about that. I think they care about, okay, what are your advantages on the court and what can you provide? You know, and he can provide automatic 3-point shooting.
Well, to an extent, but the same thing, look at Vanderbilt and
Damian Jones and Wade Baldwin.
Not Baldwin. For some reason, scouts love Baldwin. They're like, they think his size is going to overcome his horrible season.
Exactly.
But with Jones, it's just like, well, you know, he got exposed on the big level. He got exposed in the tournament. He just didn't do anything. So he went from like a lottery pick to your second round, if not.
Like, you might want to stay in school. Yeah.
Yeah. You sunk yourself so far because every, you know, the tournament doesn't do anything, but it exposes your game. It shows if you really don't have it.
And then you got those Tyrus Thomases where in the tournament, it can make you. Like, you could do nothing all year, and then that game could make you. Look at I think that guy is Malachi Richardson at Syracuse, number 23. Long arm guard who just takes over in the second half of games.
That's what, you know, you can say it doesn't matter, but.
That's what they watch.
They watch the differences. Can you rise up and, you know. Crunch time comes, are you going to wither, and is your game going to be exposed? So. You've seen players, you know, like Melo Trimble, who got completely exposed this year. And then the playoffs and the tournament and towards the end of the season. And then Malachi Richardson, also, bam, he's came from nowhere to, he'll be late first round.
Yeah. I mean, you even see with Chad Ford, he literally does stock watches as the tournament goes by. Well, his stock is dropping because he had a bad game. It's like, I kind of laugh at it sometimes, Adam, because really, it's not until you get to the combine, they do the measurements, they look at the body fat, and then if they work out, you can put them in the workouts, and then if a team really likes them enough, they will pick them, and it don't matter who it is.
Oh yeah, but you know, that's, you know, you can say, oh, it sucks, Adam, but that's what happens when you're forced to look at things in a hyper bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And go, you
and
know,
you need clicks. Yeah.
If the draft happened today, okay, his stock's down because of one game. Well, yeah, because you're forced to look at it literally from day to day, which, you know, scouts don't do that. They have, you know, hundreds of hours of tapes on everybody,
mm-hmm.
so you don't just take it from one game. It's just, if you're forced to analyze it, it's the same way, you know, I criticize that win percentage you see literally after every break now. And
mm-hmm.
oh, it's the first quarter, this team's pulling away, what's their win percentage? Like, no, I don't want to see.
And we'll finish with this, you know, with the tie into, you know, the WWE, like we were just talking about. If the NBA could book their own NBA finals, what would it be?
San Antonio and Golden State.
In the finals?
Yes, they would.
But San Antonio is ratings death.
But that's the two best teams. It's not ratings death if you know it's the...
Like, it's the one that everyone anticipates.
Yes, that's the old, you know, the McMahon screw job is...
And poor, you know, and poor ESPN, guess where the Western Conference Finals is? It's on TNT.
Exactly. And,
oh, they must, you know, be dying about that.
Cleveland, you know, LeBron James has had a lot of bad press ever since the Tyronn Lue thing. I haven't heard anything good about him. And
mm-hmm.
Really, Cleveland is just sort of taking notes on it. Everybody knows, you know, the matches, the two best teams are San Antonio, and that's what they would, NBA, if they could book it. That's why, like, you know, I say every year, the draft isn't rigged. You wouldn't put your best players on where half the country isn't going to see them because they're going to be in bed.
Okay, so once you get on your plane, you're going to Moscow. Hopefully you don't bring any communism with you. Well, on the way back, maybe you meet the Bolsheviks. Maybe a couple of other things that you learn on the way back from Russia. But when you come back and you touch down and we're into the thick of the playoffs, give me one thing that you know will have happened.
One playoff prediction?
Well, anything.
The first round is just going to be all sweeps.
Okay.
There's going to be, maybe the East, we might have a... But the West is just going to be so, like, 4-0, 4-0, 4-0, 4-0, 4-0.
I think the West is absolutely... I think the top three are going to be cinches. I think Portland could throw a monkey wrench at somebody or, you know, poo in somebody's suit. But outside of that, I don't expect too much, you know.
Even the same thing with the East. You know, Toronto, even though they're injured in Cleveland, should easily mop the floor with whatever two teams they have.
So I'm going to have to find some fill-ins for you, but I think I got some surprises for you. One involving...
All of a sudden, ratings will go up now that I'm gone.
Yeah, the ratings will go up. Yeah, I'm going to have to get my IT guy on that. but no, you know, you're going to be back. We'll be in the thick of the playoffs. We'll have a couple of fill-ins. And then once you're back, we'll be discussing a lot of these teams in the offseason, what their game plans will be, and then the playoffs as we continue going forward. So a lot, I know we were gone for a while, but we made up for it with a little bit with this episode, a little bit more of a supersized one. But hopefully everybody sticks around. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll be back next week with a couple of other guests. Thank you so much.
Thank you.